circling gloom. Lead thou me.
Well, it's a delight, let me tell you. As one of the few that's partaken among us, it is delightful.
I'm not going to shy away from this. I'm going to go with Bob Foreman Treadsdale.
For some reason, number 3.5 is coming up for me right now. I'm not sure why. I don't know why that number is up in my head.
Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation.
This all is a song for stories are fully tax deductible. Philosophies of men mingled with the podcast alive and towards building. We are the way of
fun and funny, and I want to laughing, entertainment, not taking things so seriously.
I have a hard time telling Matt and Bob apart when I listen, honestly.
Really?
No, not Matt. Scott and Bob.
There you go.
I've heard that before. Everybody, nobody. It seems like I'm.
It sounds like Seth Rogen.
Some suppose that they were preset and cannot overcome what they feel are inborn tendencies toward the impure and the unnatural. Not so. Why would our Heavenly Father do that to anything? I'm too sexy for compassion. Too sexy for compassion. So-called tolerance must be wrong.
I'm not doing this for the money. I'm not doing it for the attention. I think every single Mormon on this planet has the right to know the factual record as it relates to the church's origins. Everyone should be able to make a conscious decision with all the information on the table.
This is Infants on
Mormon Stories Podcast.
The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the core.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Mormon Stories Podcast. I should probably say a very special edition of Mormon Stories Podcast, because today we have in store for you something the likes you've never heard probably on Mormon Stories Podcast before. Today we are going to be interviewing the Quorum, from what is becoming one of the most interesting and compelling podcasts within Mormonism. And that's saying a lot, because these days in 2014, there are a lot of Mormon-themed podcasts out there. But today I'm going to be interviewing the PERMA panelists from the Infants on Thrones podcast. You can check them out at infantsonthrones.com. And it's a panelist of I don't know, several white guys, basically. But they're all really
dude
cool
bros.
And interesting. What's that?
Dude bros.
Dude bros? Yeah.
I think that's the feminist term.
I like it. That was Matt, by the way. But the panelists on Infants on Thrones podcasts are Glenn, Matt, Scott, Randy, Bob, Jake, and Tom. And they're all with us today, and I'm super excited. A couple little things about the podcast, just to kind of give listeners a heads up. It's definitely lively.
We listen to
Infants on Thrones,
but you can't listen to Infants on Thrones. Why?
I'm too little.
Cause they don't use very good language, do they?
There's a little bit, occasionally a swear word might slip out. So I just want to give my listeners a warning chance.
We'll bleep for you, John. We'll use some nice sound effects.
I'd say let's keep it real. I'll just put an explicit warning something.
Maybe you
comes
could give
up.
Us an example of some of the words that you don't want us to say.
Like if there's a list, fun. For example. Okay. Yeah.
The seven words you can't say.
Well, that actually brings me to the first question.
But there's $50 in this for me, John. I'll split it with you.
Okay. All right. Well, that was actually going to be my first question is, are you guys going to be swearing tonight on my podcast?
Nothing destroys the charm of a meal more quickly. Don't discuss unpleasant topics such as gruesome sights or sounds. Be yourself. Just be sure it's your best self.
I usually base it on how Randy feels. So if Randy starts swearing, I just follow suit and it goes from there.
Randy, what's your answer?
Yeah, I'm kind of the flag bearer on the swearing. It's kind of a little, kind of a remnant of my Mormon experience. I had a hard time as a Mormon with all of the moralizing of things that I didn't think mattered about your moral character. So I've kind of made that my signature. I'm adaptable. I don't swear in front of my patients.
No.
If you don't want me to swear, I won't swear.
No. I put this question first because I had dreams of one of you answering no.
We got it. Yes, we got it.
There it is.
$50.
You guys totally disappointed me.
$50. And we can just put that audio clip wherever we want.
Yeah.
No, you guys are free to swear on this podcast, and I don't need you to bleep it. And I just warn my listeners that there will be swear words in this episode because that's partly what Infants on Thrones is all about.
So there will be like one Mormon Stories episode on iTunes that has the explicit label on it. That'll be ours. Wow.
You'll be the one.
Nice.
You had Bent Washburn on and there was some swearing. Yeah. And did you put explicit on that? That's irresponsible. That's pretty irresponsible of you.
Well, we hope swearing's not forced, but that it just comes out in order to season the language, in order to add the right emphasis.
No, with you guys, I'm sure it's completely natural.
Yeah, we have the entire English language at our disposal.
Right, everyone.
Yeah.
All right. This is going to be interesting because there's so many of you, and I've got like 3 pages worth of questions, but let's just jump right in. For those who haven't heard Infants on Thrones podcast, and I'm going to guess that there's a decent-sized portion of my audience who haven't. Glenn, how would you describe the podcast to the listeners who haven't listened to it?
Wow. I think our official tagline that we have written on the website is I should read it. I don't know. It's like an entertaining episode or podcast about self-discovery or something like that. I don't know. I mean, we're just guys who like to talk with each other and Mormonism's a common thread, but we like talking about different things besides Mormonism as well. I mean, it usually comes back to it, and so I don't know. We just do it because it's fun.
Yeah, yeah, and if I had to characterize it, it's a bunch of guys that kind of like each other most of the time, kind of being rowdy, kind of being rambunctious, letting the swear words fly, but also doing some pretty interesting and spirited analysis and debate and discussion. It's almost like you guys are at a bar drinking. Maybe sometimes you actually are drinking. Maybe some of you are actually drinking tonight.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Nice. I think it's really well done. Also, I just have to say, and we'll talk about this later, Glenn, it's certainly been inspired by Radiolab, right? In terms of the editing and the sound.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
From
WNYC.
And NPR.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Radiolab.
Talk about that just for a second.
Well, so when we were starting out, we've been doing this for about 2.5 years. And when we first started out, that Radiolab was really what we were aiming for. And
okay, on three, we'll do five. Okay. You ready? Five.
Four.
Three.
Two.
One.
That
sucks.
If you go back and listen to some of our first few episodes, they're highly edited, putting different people's stories in and narrating in between. And that became so cumbersome. It almost was a disincentive to producing episodes. So we kind of moved away from that a little bit, but I think we still, it's mainly now just in interjecting pop culture references, or if we're talking about, something that you can find on YouTube, then we go and we get the audio from YouTube and we put that on. It's not exactly Radiolab, but it kind of started off more that way than I think it is now.
Okay. But it's still got a nice – I still like the flair of the editing. So cool. All right. So we've got a lot to cover tonight. Let's just begin by having each of you give a brief introduction about yourself. You know, no more than a minute, but just tell us a bit about just some high-level details about your life. Glenn, we'll start with you. jump in.
Okay. I live in Indiana, and I've been out of the church. Like, I haven't really attended church for maybe 2 or 3 years. I really loved the church when I was in it. I mean, there were things that I didn't like the church culture, but I was really interested in doctrine and exploring doctrines, and that's something that I'm still interested in. And it kind of drove my academic pursuit. So when I got off my mission and I went to BYU, I studied English, and then I got interested in folklore, and that's what brought me up to Indiana. But then I stopped academia. I started working for a medical device company that's local here, and now I have a job where I travel a lot. So some of the episodes that we've done, I've actually been in other countries when we've recorded it. That's me. I'm totally interested in Mormonism, interested in looking at things from different perspectives, and I just still find all that really engaging.
Yeah. And served your mission in Japan, right?
Japan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's when you and I first started collaborating, is when you were in Japan. Is that right?
Not as a missionary, but no, yeah. I lived in Japan for 3 years.
Those are my first memories of you is when you were living in Japan.
Yep.
Cool. All right. And you've only been to jail once, according to what I've heard. Is that right?
24 hours. Yeah. That's true, actually. Yeah.
Just research. Woo!
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't take much to Google and find it. But yeah.
No, I didn't Google you. I listened to the My Mormon Expression episode. I think you talked about it there. Yeah. Yeah. That was a good episode. All right. Matt, you're next.
All right. I'm an attorney by trade. I live in Arizona. Born in the church, raised in the church, married in the church, did my mission, and for all intents and purposes left 3-4 years ago. Haven't been back to church for all intents and purposes in 3-4 years. Does that sum me up? That's pretty weak, but I'd still love talking about Mormonism. I love talking about it with all different types of people, from believers to these guys here. And it seems to creep up, no matter how Michael Corleone. No matter how far I feel like I'm out,
they pull me back in.
Yeah. So there's always something to discuss. But more importantly, it's influenced and affected so much of my life that it creeps in. In almost everything, so why not talk about it?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, my wife's with me, and my wife left about the same time as I have, and without her, I don't know where I'd be. We have fun on this journey together.
Yeah, and Matt, are you okay talking about the legal work you do? Because I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, I try not to talk about it very much on the podcast because I never want it to come off as if I'm speaking for anyone. But I'm a criminal attorney by trade. I'm a trial attorney by trade. My expertise is in sexual related crimes and child crimes, as well as homicide and death penalty cases.
Yeah, that would be a fascinating podcast interview in and of itself if there was an opportunity, but
yeah,
that's cool stuff.
That's why we call him Batman.
And one of the things I've done the past 2 years has been involved with failure to report sex cases in religion, and specifically the LDS Church.
Yeah. Very cool stuff.
Yeah. All right. Happy, happy, bright stuff.
Yeah. That's good. It's important stuff. All right, Scott, tell us a bit about you.
Yes, sir. Let's see. Born and raised in the church as well. When I'm on a mission to Korea, had my faith crisis about 5.5 years ago when I got called to be in the Elders Quorum presidency. Didn't stop attending until about 1 year ago. So I think I'm probably on the more recent end of the spectrum, at least in terms of our panel of in terms of my attendance at church. But I just really have enjoyed the podcast and in making friends and getting to talk about interesting things and having cool guests on and getting to do stuff like this. It's just it's a fun side project, and part of what makes it fun is that none of us take it too seriously. So, you know.
Yeah. And Scott, I think your legal work is also kind of interesting. Are you comfortable talking about that?
Real quick? Sure. I'm an attorney. I'm in private practice. So, I do about 80% of my practice is family law, and I also do some criminal defense work, but kind of my bread and butter is divorce, custody, real nasty, contentious family court, stuff like that. I was in court today on two hearings. So yeah, it's a kind of a different side of humanity that I get to see every day.
Yeah. And I'll just say that I remember meeting Matt and Scott both first during the One Mormon Stories conference that we held in Phoenix. And I just have to say that Scott and Matt, along with a bunch of other really cool folks, started a support group for Mormons and post-Mormons in Phoenix. It's grown to over 500 members, and I think it's one of the most inspiring examples of how a community of post-Mormons and of active Mormons and everyone in between can get together and really help each other out. And I just want to give you guys a shout out about that. And if anybody lives in kind of the Phoenix area and is looking for a great group of people to hang out with, Matt and Scott are part of a really cool group. It's called Phoenix Open Mormons, right?
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Appreciate the plug.
No, it's good stuff. All right, Randy.
Hey, you're next. I was born in the church, one of seven kids in Southern California. Went on a mission to exotic Tempe, Arizona, and married in the temple, and left the church intellectually probably about 5 years ago. Stopped going about 4 years ago, and 3 years ago sent my letter of resignation. As far as my podcasting, basically, John, you created my career in podcasting.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Mormon Stories. My name is Dan Weatherspoon, and I'm very pleased today to interview Randall Snyder. Randy Snyder, we'll call him, and that's what he always goes by. Randy, why don't you say hi so people get to know your voice?
Hello, everybody. It never occurred to me until you asked me, after I'd been an atheist for all of 1 year, to represent all post-Mormon atheists on your podcast. It resulted in a 6-hour long droning podcast.
And Randy, you're the only one of us that's actually resigned from the church, right? The rest of us haven't done that.
I've done it. I don't know about the rest of you.
I don't think anybody else has.
So I'm the only one that's officially resigned. Yeah. And I sent my letter to a lot of people, and everyone loved it except for Glenn. He laughed, just laughed in my face.
We need to do an episode on it too. Like, we want to do like one on our exit stories. And I want to get your letter on there.
Yeah, he basically was. He didn't use this analogy, but the analogy basically that he used was I was like a dog barking at a train going by. But you
it's
know,
a yage. It's basically a yage, right?
Well, I felt good. I felt good barking. The barking felt good. But yeah, that's my story. I'm the one who's on this podcast considered the strident atheist, which I take exception with that.
I've decided it's that way because you self-identify that way so often. So if you just stop saying it, would stop being true.
All right,
I replace you as the strident angry atheist.
Well, you definitely replace me as the biggest asshole.
That's not true. Bob's.
Whoa. No, Matt. I can't hold a candle to your assholery.
False.
Okay, moving on.
Now, Randy, you and I first met. I remember you reaching out to me with your buddy.
Adam.
Adam, yeah. And I remember like early on. Was it you or Adam who was struggling? We kind of had a couple Skype sessions to try and kind of talk through some stuff, if I remember right.
Well, Adam and I were kind of step by step holding hands as we walked because we were really good friends. He was a dermatology resident in Jacksonville, Beaches Ward, and I was an orthodontic resident. So we hit it, and we both loved sports. We hit it off, and after we both left our residencies, he called me and said he had a problem with Joseph Smith because of rough stone rolling. And so that was about 2006. And then as we were like struggling through this, he, through his sister, had found out about your podcast that was defunct at the time. You had just like quit. And, and that's when I met you, was during that hiatus that you had. Or not met you, but, you know, we talked and on the phone, and you were kind of like my counselor through this
process.
I'm
going to guess that was 2009, though, right?
2000, yeah, it was 2009, yeah. Yes. Yeah. When did you start up again?
I had around that time, yeah, around that time.
Yeah.
I've actually quit and started a couple times, but
yeah. So it was about 2009, yeah.
And Randy's been cool enough to invite me to a couple of USC. He's a huge USC football fan. Fight on. And
Randy, what does that mean again? I forget.
That's the French horns in the song Conquest. It's one of our fight songs. Okay. It's just a noise.
Randy's the only reason I follow USC football.
I get a text after every USC game from John.
All right, Bob, you and I actually maybe go back the farthest, because I remember emails from you really early on.
Yeah. Have you gotten through the first one yet, John?
What's that?
Have you finished reading the first one yet?
Bob writes long emails.
Yeah.
He does. And Bob, actually, I know your brother Tom too. I worked with your brother Tom.
Yeah. What's funny, John, is we met before we chatted over email. This goes way, 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 way back. We met in Salt Lake at a get-together, a Bloggernacle get-together in the 2004-2005 time frame. I think it was like
Fowles? With like Jordan and John Fowles?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
At their house. And at the time, I remember you were sort of out of left field. I mean, we'll get to this, but it was interesting because we're like all bloggers who know each other, and then there's this guy John DeLynn, and you, and nobody knew exactly who you were, but that was pre-Mormon Stories, I think, so it's interesting.
And you've been with Microsoft how long?
I was with Microsoft for nearly 5 years. Now I work in the Bay Area for a company called SAP. So I grew up, was born, raised in the church, served a mission, married in the temple, met my wife on my mission. What else? No kids, married 12 years, and left the church, I guess, crisis of faith 2007, came out to family 2009. So it's been a few years, but can't leave it alone. So
Yeah.
We need to do a podcast on why Bob hasn't had kids yet.
Like a whole podcast just on that one topic. Jeez. Sure.
Cool. Well, Tom, I think I met you and knew you from the Mormon Expression days as one of the first panelists there, but maybe not. But tell us a bit about you.
Yeah, I think that was it. We had some email correspondence, but you know, I was probably one of the thousands that was trying to get to the John DeLynn, but yeah. So I live in Orem. I was an Elders Quorum president. I was on the High Council when I went through my crisis of faith back in 2008, 2009. And then I did this similar thing that Randy did, wrote a letter, but I didn't send it in. I haven't resigned yet. My wife still attends. So I still attend occasionally. I actually attended church 2 weeks ago. So,
wow.
It's just a form of negotiation to keep peace in the Perry household, and that's fine with me, because I still deeply love my wife, and that's meaningful to me to keep peace in the household. So
do you still have like good friends in the ward and stuff that make it easier for you to be there when you are there?
Some, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a handful of them, but most of them are turncoats. I'm kidding.
Mine moved to North Carolina.
No, I've been meeting with my stake president pretty regularly in the last little while. So at first I was a little panicked that it was going to lead to an excommunication. But
yeah, I was going to say that doesn't end well.
but so far so good. You know, he seems to be very genuine and appreciative of my efforts.
How many times has he? How many times has he bore his testimony to you, Tom?
However many times we met, 3 times.
Every time,
but it doesn't matter, because he does seem to. I mean, he's been reading the stuff like, you know, I give him homework and he's been reading it.
Tell me how it ends, John.
I won't tell you how this ends.
No, it ends good. In front of 12 people, bro.
No, I'm sure it'll end up better for you than it has for me.
So is Randy the only one who's resigned?
Where have you been?
Hey, welcome to 20 minutes
ago. This is a Matt patented move.
Did you just have a stroke?
Did we answer that question?
Yes, we did.
I hate when I do that.
Yeah, there's a Skype lag of about 23 minutes. So
when are we going to hear from Tom?
Yeah, good one.
The funny thing is, I bet a lot of listeners will be like, well, have we heard from Tom? Because we all sound the same. So,
yeah. Well, Jake, you're the most recent to join, so just tell us a bit about you and your famousness.
Hi, I'm Brother Jake. And in response to all these so-called intellectuals and feminists talking about how Mormons are sexist, racist, how complicated the gospel is.
What's this Book of Mormon thing?
So let me set the record straight. Mormons are not polygamists. I mean, yeah, we used to be, sure, but let me explain.
Right, well, I'm a very, very minor internet celebrity.
Oh, you're a major internet celebrity.
I have a very similar background.
This is the Brother Jake for everyone who has listened to Brother Jake. So go ahead.
Right. So if you've seen the Brother Jake videos, that's me. I have a similar background to the other panelists. Grew up in the church, served a mission in Peru. When I came back in early 2009, kind of in the wake of the 2008 election and Prop 8 type stuff. So I consider the Prop 8 people to be kind of the baby boomers of post-Mormonism. So anyway, I'm part of that whole wave of people. Anyway, but we ended up moving. When I got married, my wife did a master's program at the School of Music at Indiana University. So we ended up in Bloomington, and Glenn was actually my first home teacher.
Nice.
So it was pretty cool. We hit it off, and I sat in on a couple Mormon Expression podcasts just as a panelist on a couple of them. But eventually
were either you or Glenn TBMs when you first met?
Glenn, how would you say? I know Glenn wasn't, but
no,
Glenn
wasn't. But one of the first experiences Jake seeing me was when I stood up and bore my untestimony to the ward, which we did a podcast about. So that's out there. So Jake's wife, it's funny because when I look at the two of you now, I think that she's a little more conservative than you are when it comes to the church. But back then I would have said that you were a little more conservative than she is when it comes to the church. So,
I wouldn't
think that Jake was TBM. One of my favorite experiences with Jake was at the end of an elders' quorum, and you know we had been talking about a couple of things, and there's like 5 minutes left, and Jake raises his hand. He goes, "What's the whole deal with like the priesthood ordinances in the church and exclusivity? I mean, what is the deal with priesthood exclusivity in the temple?" And everybody is like looking at each other, I loved it. There wasn't any time to answer the question, and nobody that would really want to discuss it anyways. But I think our former bishop, who was the state high counselor at the time, bore his testimony, and that was it. Did I get that right, Jake? Was that the question that you asked?
I don't remember what it was. It was something about the exclusivity. Like, why are we focused on who gets into heaven and who doesn't?
Yeah.
That type of thing.
So it was kind of edgy for a normal elders' quorum type question, and it was totally endearing of Jake to me from the start. So, no, I wouldn't call him a TBM.
I'm just loving the idea of you two in elders' quorum together. That just makes me really happy.
With Adam Fisher.
That's like the coolest elders' quorum ever, officially.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome, actually. If I was still in Bloomington, I might still be going to church. But when I moved when we moved here to North Carolina, I live in North Carolina now, and so I stopped attending it about a year ago. But I guess it was about 2 years ago or 18 months ago that I started the Brother Jake series, and it kind of took on a little life of its own. So anyway, I'm definitely the most recent to the whole podcasting Mormon media world or post-Mormon media world or whatever you want to call it. So I don't know. I feel like I'm the new guy.
Yeah.
Jake's also the baby of the infants.
Right. I'm the youngest by far.
How old are you? 26, right?
Yeah, 26.
Oh, wow. That's super young.
Yeah, we're most of us are from our mid-30s to our 40s.
Mid-40s, yeah.
And Jake is just a babe. I mean, did you say you got home from
mid 40? 42.
Okay, who's the oldest?
Glenn's a senior member.
42.
Randy, how old are you?
I'm 40.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And Jake, you got home from your mission in 09?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So oh, I'm the infantiest infant of us.
Wow.
All.
You were like in eighth grade when I started Mormon Stories.
That's insane.
Yeah. Not only that, John, I served in his hometown, Sholo. I was a missionary when he was 4 years old. He was a sunbeam or whatever. That's one awesome. Up above sunbeam
and
when
you,
I was a
you
missionary.
You guys knew the same one-armed guy, right? Oh, no, yeah. You didn't know the same one-armed guy.
Yeah, thanks for the inside joke, Glenn.
right.
Well, Brother Jake, where do people watch your videos? How do they get to them? Just a quick shout-out.
They're on YouTube, so you can just Google search Brother Jake, and there's a channel. Yeah. They'll come up. They're all
awesome.
Right. Well,
they're all awesome. All right. Well, that's the introduction. Now we're about an hour in. No, just kidding. we'll see how we can get through the rest of these questions. But real quickly, I want to just hear firing round what it was that was the main impetus to you guys losing your faith. So we'll go in the same order. So Glenn, what was it for you?
Let's reverse order.
Okay. Jake. Jake, what was it for you?
Yeah, the catalyst for me was Prop 8. So coming back from my mission, the girl I was dating, who later became my wife, she was definitely not happy with the church's actions in Prop 8 and the way that they were talking about homosexuality. And it wasn't something I'd ever really considered before. But anyway, that was kind of the catalyst for me.
All right. Tom?
I think it's Mountain Meadows Massacre was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. So yeah.
And you interviewed what's his name for that on Mormon Expression, right?
Will Bagley.
Will Bagley.
Yeah, and Gene Sessions. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was great. That was great. Okay. Bob.
Oh, gosh. It was a slow burnout with my Mormon liberal blogging. Shout out to By Common Consent back in the day.
So you started on By Common Consent?
Yeah. I mean, I was doing that before they came together. I was one of the originals, lasted not super long, but I'd say the straw that broke the camel's back was probably Grant Palmer's book, Insider's View. I really enjoyed it, and I was struggling with the Book of Mormon historicity. But looking back, it's one of those things you kind of want to change your answer in retrospect. It's like, don't let it be the Book of Mormon. I want it to be something else and more creative, but that's kind of what it was.
Are you still friends with Steve Evans?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Sure. We haven't caught up in a long time, but we chat on Facebook every once in a while.
Awesome. All right, Randy.
Well, like the certain points that led to a certain kind of a precipitation of it. So 2006, I learned about polyandry through Rough Stone Rolling. At the time, I was a newly called high priest group leader in my ward.
I thought Rough Stone Rolling kind of didn't address polyandry very much.
No, it addresses it. It okay. apologizes for it.
Okay.
But it definitely acknowledges that it happened. That was a slow burn for 2 years until 2008 when Prop 8 came out. I was in Arizona at the time, so we had Prop 102.
Yeah.
And as one of the leaders in the ward, they were asking me to do a lot of things. Put a sign in my yard, knock on doors, make phone calls. I didn't want to do any of that. And that was the moment where we talked about Adam earlier. He and I both, this whole prop, he lived in California at the time. This whole Prop 8, 102 thing was just something that we just morally was repulsive to us. And it made us wonder if we were good Mormons or not. And then 2009, beginning of 2009 is when I learned about Mormon Stories. So Mormon Stories took me
home. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Mormon Stories. And it wasn't Mormon Stories as much as it was like you introduced me to people like Grant Palmer. And then I read his book. And then you introduced me to people like Todd Compton. And then I read his book. Right. So, it wasn't like you said, this is what you need to believe. But you introduced me to stuff where I had the information and I was able to make a decision on my own. So I guess it's a combination of polyandry and Prop 8.
Yeah. And Mormon Stories. I'll take
it. Mormon Stories.
Mormon Stories is the gateway drug. It's marijuana post-Mormonism.
Okay. So that means that our whole solar system could be like one tiny atom in the fingernail of some other giant being. Oh, this is too much. That means that one tiny atom in my fingernail could be
one little tiny universe.
Could I buy some pot from you?
Yep.
All right, Scott.
Sure. So I was the typical fast burn. I went from, you know, being super excited to being called into the Elders Quorum presidency and thinking I'm just going to, you know, really magnify my calling. And I wanted to read a bunch of church history. And then, like, over the next day or two, trying to figure out which books I wanted to order on Amazon, I'd run into, like, all of the problematic issues and just started binging. I didn't know anything before that. And, you know, 2 or 3 days later, it had all fallen apart for me. And just been trying to pick up the pieces ever since.
Holy moly. So a couple days it fell apart?
Yeah. Like before my books even got there from Amazon, like 2 days, I'd already read like Farms's review of In Sacred Loneliness. And as soon as I read that and it said, there's a line in there that said something like, there's not good evidence that Joseph Smith had sex with any of his polyandrous wives except one. and then that was like, okay, well, you know, that's on the BYU website talking about this book. Do I really even need to read the book? Like, what's the
except one?
Yeah,
that's not so bad.
It's still there too. I found it a few months ago. It's still there.
Oh my gosh! All right. And what year was that, Scott?
That was 2009. That was April of 2009. So I was I just finished my second year of law school and had, you know, like 2 weeks off before my summer job started. So that was Satan's barn door wide open right there.
Got it. Okay. All right, Matt, what was it for you?
So I was called to be gospel doctrine teacher. And I had this nice little following, and I taught for 4 years. And it'd be one of those things where when I'd teach, the thing would be overflowing, and I'd explore all types of different ideas and really go out and research all the scriptures in context. And that was what started me away from the church, reading scriptures in context and seeing the Mormification or the how Mormon-centric these lesson manuals were trying to be, and it didn't make sense. And I started reading both the Doctrine and Covenants and Book of Mormon, and it just started hitting me that, well, this is pretty self, this seems to be just Joseph Smith doing his own thing. Why? This seems weird. And that's what started it. And then Prop 8, or in Arizona, it was Prop 102 hit. And that, to me, was so clearly an amoral position to take, just as it pertains to equal protection and those types of issues, that just tripped something in my head that said, the brethren are wrong. They can be wrong. They're historically wrong. If they're wrong on so many things, I need to look at other things. And then that led me down the rabbit's hole to historicity of the Book of Mormon, Book of Abraham, polyandry, post-manifesto polygamy, you know, and you just start tick, 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 and everything just kind of tumbles after that.
What year was that?
It would have been sometime between 2006, 2007 until like 2010.
Okay.
And your interview with Grant Palmer was probably the most transformative interview for me, and just clarifying issues. So
the first one or the second one?
The first one.
Okay.
I can remember I went on a run, and I don't run. I go to the gym. I spend 20, 30 minutes. I'm done. But I went on a run, and I didn't stop through the whole thing. It's true. And at some point, this is a true story. At some point, I'm like sobbing over the just the, I don't know, the clarity that I had, that it was he just articulated things that I had kind of just barely kind of approached from the periphery. And it just, everything was, for me, was clarified after that moment.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's great. It was one of the most spiritual experiences I've had.
That's awesome. No, I mean, I've met you and I'm trying to imagine you sobbing, and it is heartwarming. It's heartwarming. And
that's a gentle giant. I'm actually pretty sensitive guy.
No, I know. Cool. That's a cool story. Thanks for sharing. Glenn.
All right. Well, I think a combination of Bob and Matt a little bit, with the slow burn, enjoying the gospel doctrine. When that was taken away, I kind of didn't have an outlet to explore anymore. And, you know, like what Matt said, I did a lot of research that was just looking in the scriptures and thinking about it and going, that doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. There were also people in my life that considered themselves to be very, very pious Mormons that were totally hypocrite, you know, like horrible gossip type people that kind of put a little tarnish on it. When I was on my mission, there were a lot of really politically ambitious missionaries, and that kind of opened up my eyes. You know, John, a little bit like your baptism story, you know, did in yours. I just kind of went, wait a second, what's going on here? But, you know, it was a slow burn that took a long time. And, you know, for people that listen to Mormon Expression and remember me when I was a part of that podcast, I think I've even changed since then. I think I was probably more nomish in those days, and now much less forgiving. I mean, it might sound strange for people that listen to Infants on Thrones and know, but I'm pretty critical of people and beliefs and things, much more so now than I was maybe 3-4 years ago. So
very cool. I just remembered that I interviewed your family for an entire episode about divorce on Mormon Stories. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, I shared that with two or three people in the last week. That's still out there.
I haven't met your mom, your dad, but your mom is super cool.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think she would probably be really. There was a time where she wouldn't want me to talk about her and her faith journey on the podcast, but she's totally out now, and it's awesome.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, it's awesome. It's so great.
Your mom and your sister Melissa, who's awesome, by the way, too.
Melissa's awesome too. Shout out to Melissa.
And my brother, who was on that episode, and you know, he left after high school, so he was out before any of us for different reasons, but you know, but my dad's not. My dad's still very much in, and we don't talk much, and I don't know how aware he is or is not of this podcast. I was shocked that he was able to, or that he was willing to do that episode with us, John, because that was.
I remember him. He was a bit of an odd duck. Not odd, but just conservative or something.
Yeah. And we hadn't talked together as a group, the five of us, up until that point, and we haven't since, you know. So it was, a really pivotal moment, very interesting there, but yeah.
I'd totally forgotten about that until just now.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome episode. And I always forget that was you, Glenn.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
when I listened to it, it wasn't, you know, Glenn, my friend, you know, who I've talked to for hours. It was just this dude and his family. So I got to go back and listen to that.
Yeah, awesome. The best moment. The best moment was when your dad identified as a McConkie Mormon, and he totally owned it. And Glenn's like, "No, Dad, that speaks volumes."
Yeah,
that's awesome. All right, so Matt gets brownie points for being prescient because he's already answered the question I'm about to ask. So Matt, you get a twofer on this one.
Yeah.
I assume that part of the reason why you guys podcast is because you've had some pretty significant moments in your life in association with podcasts, whether it be Mormon Stories, Mormon Expressions, or even others, maybe even non-Mormon ones. But I just thought it'd be fun, since we're talking about your histories, to have each of you sort of pick, if you had to pick one episode that was like earth-shattering or mind-blowing or seismic shifts for you? You know, which, if you had to pick one, which would you pick? And it, you know, obviously it could be anything. So I'll start with, I'll start from the middle of the pack. So Scott, I'm going to start with you.
Sure. So I would say probably Mormon Expression's two-part episode on the Nauvoo Expositor.
Yeah, that was a great one. Yeah.
Mind blower. That's a classic. I've probably listened to it three or four times. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's one of those things. For me, the reason I'm involved with this a lot is just because I find Mormonism interesting and I find Mormon history interesting. And what's more interesting than the late Nauvoo period? I mean, it's just crazy. So, yeah, and they did a great job. And that was just a lot of fun to listen to.
I agree. That was awesome. All right, Randy.
That's going to sound lame after Matt, but my first introduction to podcast period was Mormon Stories. That was pretty early in the – well, no, it wasn't really that early in the podcasting scene, but I hadn't tapped into the podcast scene. Probably the most important podcast for my life is Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Sure, yeah.
That took me to the next –
was there a particular episode or
– of Skeptic's Guide?
Yeah.
The first one they ever did.
Okay.
But before that, it was the Grant Palmer one. He had raised things, issues that I had never been aware of or considered. I was already kind of disillusioned with the church, but I didn't have anything to put my feet on for why I felt the way I did, other than polyandry. But Grant Palmer's, that interview was epic to me. I can still remember exactly where I was. I went golfing. I was driving to go golfing and listened to it on the way in. I couldn't wait to finish golfing so I can get back in my car and listen to the rest of the Grant Palmer interview. And I didn't cry like Matt did, but it was such an intense, amazing experience to listen to Grant Palmer's interview.
Yeah, that was powerful. I interviewed him in his house. that was kind of mind blowing.
How early? That was pretty early. That was one of your first ones, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I made a lot of enemies in Fair and Farms when I did that interview. But yep, that was probably in the first 30, I want to say, but I'm not totally sure.
Yeah.
And I you don't need to apologize if you list something else. I swear I'm not fishing for compliments here. I just think it's kind of an interesting question. So don't feel any pressure to say Mormon Stories. Jake, did you have a mind-shifting podcast experience? Or are you too young? Are you too young?
No, I did. In fact, there are two that come to mind. One was the interview with Michael Coe on Mormon Stories. And that was – I remember where I was for that one. I was on this hellish flight across the country for I think it was like over Christmas or something. So I was flying from Indiana to Utah and we got stuck somewhere and we're sitting there and I'm just listening to this incredibly this man who's incredibly positive about Joseph Smith, about Mormonism, not the most, you know, congenial man you could ever imagine, just flatly deconstructing any sort of argument for, in my mind, deconstructing the argument, any sort of argument for the historicity of the Book of Mormon from an archaeological standpoint. That was mind bending for me. Another one was actually one of the first podcasts that Infants on Thrones did, the Apostasy podcast that Glenn showed me. I don't know. It was just so inspiring to listen to someone that I knew that had produced something that was so well done and edited together and so stylized in a way that I loved hearing. So that was something that was really inspiring for me to eventually start podcasting. Or when he asked me to come on Infants on Thrones, I was very excited to jump on. So
see, Glenn, you were the gateway for Jake.
Right, exactly.
Well, we kind of influenced each other. And it's interesting that when we did our first promo for Infants on Thrones, I put together like this little 5-minute thing, and Jake and his wife Erica were in my house, and I played it for him. And Erica's like, no, And I listened. I changed it up. But they were influential on me as well. So
that's awesome. All right, Tom, how about you?
Oh, most influential podcast. I guess I'll go to the earliest that I can possibly think of. I'm going to go with the Church Is Not True podcast with Bob McHugh. It's you can't nice. Really find it anywhere, I don't think. I don't know if you can. I ended up saving it, but I might have it on my external somewhere. But I had to, because I
was going to say, I can listen to Bob McHugh all day.
Yeah, he's great.
Because I remember when I was going through all my stuff and I was trying to find anything on Mormonism out there in the podcast world, and there really was just slim pickings back then.
Yeah.
And I found like an archive of this, The Church Is Not True or whatever, and I found that they had interviewed or talked to Bob McHugh, and I listened to that probably three or four times straight. And it was a little bit after that that I kind of got gutsy and I reached out to Bob, and we had some email correspondence and a couple phone calls and whatnot, but that was probably the most powerful and transformative for me in the early days. I mean, there's a few Sunstone panel audio that I listened to that kind of stopped me dead in my tracks, but I don't know. Yeah. Bob McHugh was pretty transformative for me. So.
No, I ran into him back in like 2000, 2001 when I was having my faith crisis. I stumbled on his writings, and he was definitely a really important influence. I interviewed Hiram from thechurchisnottrue.com as my second interview, I think.
Yeah, and then you yanked it, and then you kind
he
of
– He asked me to. Yeah, he like started having second thoughts and getting scared, so he asked me to take it down. And Hiram's not his real name, by the way.
have you had any correspondence with him at all since
many years ago? He like yeah, but not really. I don't know where he is or what's going on. Mike Norton was the other part of that podcast, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still around.
Mike. That was interesting. Yeah, that was an interesting podcast. Cool. All right, Bob.
I think I'm going to go with the Pullman one that Scott. Yeah. did with Glenn. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well edited, and I thought it showed the church for what it really is in a very vivid way. It's just stuck in my memory that way. And then the other one I wanted to give a quick shout out to, because I'm vain like that, is the Book of Mormon movie review that Matt and I did with Matt's friend from another podcast, and we did that on Mormon Expression, and it just got me to the point where I was realizing that I really enjoyed podcasting, and it was a thing. It's like an outlet. It's a way for me to be disagreeable and have fun at the same time in a way that I sort of missed out on being in a righteous Zion-like home, I guess.
And you guys talk a bit about the backstory of that on your My Mormon Expression podcast, I should note.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay. Glenn, did I already ask you?
No.
Okay, Glenn.
there's a ton. I'm going to go with the Mormon Expression Zilpha interviewing Nate. Just it made homosexuality like
I love real, that. That was amazing.
Like, just so real, because I didn't have that 2008 or Prop 8. Whenever that was. What was that?
2008.
Was it in 2008? Yeah. So I was in Japan in during that time, and so it didn't I was kind of aware of what was going on, but I didn't have the reaction that a lot of people have had. But listening to Zilpha and Nate was when just like homosexuals became very real people to me. And so there have been a ton of really influential episodes, but I'm going to put that at top.
Yeah, I love that one too. That was great. All right, Matt, you get a second one. Do you want to throw another one on? Or are you good? Did we lose Matt?
He's got a 23-minute lag, remember.
Yeah.
I'll throw on a second one. This is Scott again.
Okay.
I'll throw on a second one. Your episode 29, when you talked about the atonement and how that didn't make sense, that was a profound moment for me too.
Oh,
yeah, I'll second that. Is that one of those that is it still living? Still there?
Oh yeah. Okay, that was just okay. That was the first time I was allowed myself to be interviewed.
Yeah, that was good.
You got really raw in that one.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah,
and you broke. I mean, it was maybe only a few minutes, but you kind of broke down like, well, why would it make sense for
Jesus to give us these sins and then punish us for having them?
Them, and then we have to use this thing called the atonement. But if we don't do it right, then
and we're supposed
it
doesn't, to be thankful
it doesn't
for
work.
Him?
And it's just, yeah, it was great.
Well, thanks. That was fun. All right. So did we lose?
Not important.
Did we lose Matt?
Not important.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, that's fun. Okay. So, so I guess I want to. I want to refer the listeners, if they haven't heard it, to the My Mormon Expression episode. And I'll just say, you know, what that episode was about was just basically just the fact that many of you guys were early contributors or middle late contributors to the Mormon Expression podcast. And I just have to say that it was that interview that made me want to interview you guys, but not because it had to do with anything with John Larson. I was really put off by the fact when I first saw that you guys were doing that interview or that episode where you were going to kind of dish a little bit, I thought, on John Larson.
You thought it was going to be a hit piece?
I did. Yeah. And I thought, this is going to make me sick to my stomach. And it's really hard to do this kind of stuff. And you guys are just going to, you know, dump on John. And I was just not looking forward to it, and I almost didn't give it a fair chance. But when I listened, what really struck me, well, first of all, was how much respect I felt that you guys had for John Larson.
After you got past Matt reading his email at the beginning. Yeah. Yeah.
To me, I felt like you guys really respected John, but also I just love the candor and the sincerity of everyone sharing their experience. You know what I mean? But I'm only mentioning that to short circuit a bit real long conversation we could have about how you guys met and your time with Mormon Expression. I don't think we need to totally go into that here. Unless there's something you guys want to say about it, but I'll just say that many of you guys were part of Mormon Expression and then you decided to jump off and start your own. Is there anything else that needs to be talked about here about that? Anybody?
I would just say it really influenced. I mean, still, I think you can see the influence of Mormon Expression and the things that we do. And I think especially with our listener essays, that's a feature that I really like about Infants on Thrones. And so I know there have been questions about that. If people want to do a listener essay, we're still accepting them. You can go onto our website on the contact tab. There's instructions on how to do it. I think two things that I'd say about it. One, please don't send a written essay. Like, record it so that we can hear it. Because, like, reading it, it's a different type of language than you actually speak. And it's hard to hear how you're going to sound when you're explaining, you're telling your story, whatever it is that you're passionate, that you want to talk about. So record something, email it to us. We've got instructions on how to do that. And then the second thing, sometimes it takes us a long time to get to them. And, you know, so what we do, we've got like a shared Dropbox that all of us have access to, and we put them in a folder there, and then we kind of get to them when we get to them. And I don't know. Do you guys even know how many we have that are sitting in our Dropbox right now?
Like a half dozen.
Yeah. I was going to say five or six, right?
Yeah. Five or six. And so it just takes us a while to get to some of them. You know, apologies for that, but that's just kind of the way it goes. But that's definitely an influence from Mormon Expression. So I think there's still things that we do that were started there.
Right. All right, I'm going to stop. We're right at about 54, so I'm going to go ahead and stop and mark that kind of as potentially the first episode. Is that all right? Let's just have a really brief discussion about how it started. Like, well, we don't need to talk necessarily about Mormon Expression unless it's super important, but more just like the brainchild, like what were the early sparks and some of the early thoughts behind it. And it's kind of the early deliberations.
Well, so it started out, part of it was because Mormon Expression was kind of Mormon Expression was on hiatus. There was a bit of a vacuum there, and I think me and Matt talked on the phone a couple of times. We'd been talking about some other things, and then we'd gotten Glenn involved and you know, Tom and Bob, and we all just kind of I think it gelled together pretty quickly through a series of phone calls. And then I remember Glenn.
So it started with Scott and Matt.
Well, no. I think it was honestly, it was. How would you guys describe it?
No, I think that's right, Scott. I mean, you okay. And Matt were having some independent conversations. So I'd been talking with Tom a little bit about maybe. But it was then you and I had some conversation. We're like, you got your chocolate and my peanut butter. And your peanut butter is under my chocolate. And, right. You know,
gross.
Delicious. It's delicious. Yeah.
And then when it really fired up was when Glenn sent out like this, his initial draft of the promo audio. That was just so awesome. And it was like, really? How do we not? Oh, yeah. It was like, how do we not do this?
It was like it was off the Cult of Personality by Living Color, and it was had all these clips in. And
because
I was so fired up when you sent that out.
Because I thought we should call ourselves not another Mormon themed podcast or something like that. Right, you know, kind of I can't believe it's not butter, and that quickly got voted down. And you know, it was through email that we had a lot of suggestions for a name, and I think it was Tom that suggested Infants on Thrones among like maybe five or six others. But we all kind of went, yeah, that's down. Cool.
Well, Glenn's email, all it said was, is it time? ? And he sent this audio clip that was, I think it's been used before, but it's basically a little intro, a little Infants on Thrones intro teaser. And I was like, Scott, man, I got pretty worked up. I thought this, it is time. It is time to do something.
All right, Glenn, you're going to have to splice that in.
Okay.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Mormon Truth. And I go by the name of
Mormon Stories Podcast.
Okay, welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression.
On this episode of the VCC Zeitcast.
Get in line and grab your dish. It's time for another helping of the Mormon Potluck Podcast. Tune in for
But not only that, we talked about this earlier in episode one, but we did the Book of Mormon movie review, and we did it. It was pre-Infants, but it was edited Infant style. Glenn had edited in a bunch of audio clips from the movie, and then that sat.
Yeah, because we did it like in February, and then it wasn't released really until June. February.
Yeah. And so it sat for 4 months, and all of us knew it was a good episode. I'd highly recommend everyone to listen to it, mainly for the fact that we had a Never Mormon watch that movie and review it, and to listen to the moment. And we talked about this earlier, but the moment where he's like, "You guys read this book when you were in like Sunday school, and it said that dark skin was a curse, so that you wouldn't want to have sex with dark-skinned people. Didn't you think that was racist?" Like he could hear the gears grinding in his brain, and we all just were. It was such a beautiful moment. Like, yes, of course. But when that sat for 4 months, I think that Glenn, am I wrong? That kind of grated on you.
Oh sure, but I was already done with Mormon Expression by then anyway, so I was.
Yeah, well, maybe this is more Matt and I, because Matt and I were still exchanging texts and emails about it. Like, this, our episode was so great, and John won't release it, and so I think that's what really made Matt and I really want to get on board when Glenn came calling to start a new podcast.
But the group gelled together pretty quickly. I mean, we all had relationships with each other. Like I'd talk to Tom and Glenn a lot. Matt, you know, I'd worked with him here. Randy, I'd met. I mean, Matt and Randy are super good friends. Bob, we all knew. I mean, the initial group came together really, really just, I mean, it was like instant.
And like I said, even in the beginning, like Jake was involved to a degree. I mean, he was aware he was having influence on us. It just wasn't until later that I'm like, let's just do this for real, man, and bring Jake into it.
Jake was on the first. Jake was on the masturbation or the porn.
Well, that was Mormon Expression.
We did, right?
That was Mormon Expression.
Right.
Yeah, but Jake, you and Erica were on the Atonement one, right?
Yeah.
That's probably why you listened to it.
The apostasy.
Oh, the apostasy.
One.
Yeah, not the Atonement. Apostasy. Yeah, yeah. Another A word.
Right.
And what month and year did you guys release your first episode?
We recorded 2012. In June 2012 was our first recording.
Yeah, but yeah. And we released a little promo, but we didn't really start until about August 2012.
Okay. So this is a full year and more after the Phoenix, Arizona Mormon Stories Conference, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's so I'm putting it together. That's right before I kind of like imploded. So.
That's what she said.
All right. So I've got it in my memory bank. Okay. So why? Like, what made you guys think that another Mormon podcast was even necessary? Like, what were you thinking about that?
Well, for me, this is Matt. I had my own.
And feel free to criticize. I mean, no hold bar. I'm cool.
No,
whatever.
I had my own Mormon themed podcast, and it was inspired by you, John. It was called Mormon Mission Stories, but we ended up not doing very well because of just creative difference. I had this complete TBM on one side. I'm trying to use this to keep me in the church, but I just want to talk about real raw, honest stories about the mission that aren't always faith promoting, and I just thought they were fun and funny, and I wanted to laugh. And that's what I felt was lacking in the Mormon podcast world was just laughing, entertainment, kind of not taking things so seriously. There was, you know, this real heady stuff and just conversations, but there wasn't a lot of levity. And that's what I wanted thought that was lacking. And so for me, that was a big motivation, is just to have fun conversations that were maybe a little lighter and not so deep and heady and just
like
depressing.
Talking about feminism and things like that.
This is
feminists
on thrones, philosophies of
people
mingled with humans. We are the
group.
Yeah, but no. From the beginning, we knew things that we didn't want to do. As well, like we didn't want to take donations, we didn't want to start a Facebook page
community,
like a Facebook right. community. We didn't want to moderate anything with other people. We didn't want to have, you know, support groups or anything like that. It was just, hey, we're going to have fun and we're going to do this project. And as soon as it's not fun anymore, you know, then we're going to be done.
Well, and originally we also wanted to push away from Mormonism to some degree as well. We wanted to do other topics. I mean, that was, if I remember right, that was part of the reason why we didn't want Mormon in our
name.
In
yeah.
Our name.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
also when we listed our podcast on iTunes, we're under philosophy, not under religious anything, because we wanted
to. Which I think
hurts
our listenership to a degree.
It does.
Yeah, we should be under entertainment, Bob.
All right. Well, we're doing pretty well under philosophy, though. I kind of like being in the top 10 there on iTunes.
That's sweet.
No, we're not really in the top 10 in philosophy. What is that? It like rotates.
Depends on the day you check.
Exactly
in.
Right.
quit downplaying it. Come on, man.
Come on. We're awesome.
Did we ever? I don't. Because a lot of the listeners on Mormon Stories aren't going to know why we're called Infants on Thrones. Did we ever say where the name really came from?
Yeah, Tom. Where'd you get that from, Tom?
It was from the King Follett Discourse. I mean, we've done several discussions in our podcast about it, but it was Joseph Smith who pontificated about, you know, seeing infants on thrones and the child won't grow one stature or something like that. So
One cubit.
It was more of just the silliness and the ridiculousness of it that kind of, I think, drew us to that name, I think.
Yeah, and the other thing we liked is that it was also pretty accurate in describing us as a bunch of, you know, we're not experts on anything other than our fields that we practice in. And we're basically just infants in the world trying to discover the world. Because when you're Mormon, all the answers are given to you on a platter. And once you leave Mormonism, Now you gotta get this whole big world to explore.
A whole new world.
Did you really do that?
Horrible.
Oh God.
Horrible.
That was the first. That was like one of the first clips I did because you said that in our intro, and I put that in. I don't know.
And now we've got this whole new world opened up to us.
Yeah, he just saved himself like 10 minutes of editing by just singing it right in there.
We've really evolved.
But the name of the podcast is kind of a double entendre. It's an homage to Mormonism and the absurdity of some of the aspects of Mormonism, but it's also...
What does it juxtapose, though, Randy?
I have no problem with comparisons because it'll be the juxtaposition will be stark.
I like that you use the word juxtaposition.
You get one of those once an episode. You get one two and one big word.
There's no.
Randy, I don't know if you remember this, but I distinctly remember being with you in Southern California, and you telling me that you're going to do this podcast with these guys, and you told me the name, and I remember telling you, dude, put Mormon somewhere in the title because it'll be more successful that way. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that, but maybe it got into my subconscious because I've been fighting this battle for years with these guys.
It's true. Randy's been telling us that we should have had Mormon in our name.
If we don't have Mormon in our name, we are not going to be as accessible to the ex-Mormon community, which really is probably
a good
the bulk of our listenership.
I think you guys are finding your. I think you're finding your audience for sure. But
I think it's been good that we've flown under the radar for as long as we have.
It's helped you develop kind of a style
because it's more about us. You know, I mean, it's just this is a hobby that we do because it's fun, and I don't want to get like so big or anything like that.
What do you mean flown? What do you mean flown under the radar, Glenn?
Oh, you know, like we don't have huge numbers of listenership. Yeah, you know, like how people say, why don't you advertise in more places? Why don't you like promote yourself? And like I don't think we do a ton of that. We really haven't. We've just kind of done this and put it out.
Yeah, it's organic growth.
Yeah, it is organic growth. Yeah. So that's what I mean by fly under the radar.
But I think you guys are really coming on. So it's fun to see you guys be successful. So. Okay, so the all maleness, all whiteness, all straightness, you guys are all getting kind of hammered. Not all, but there are some people that are kind of hammering you guys for that. Just tell me how you guys think about that and what the future might hold in terms of more diversity or not, you know?
Well, haven't we talked about this from the beginning about who, you know, are we going to let other people determine what our voice is going to be? Aren't we just a bunch of guys hanging out? Should we have more? Should we have females? Should we have someone that's a little more believing? Should we? I mean, it just, and we do deal with this quite a bit, it seems like. We talk about it, and it's one of the reasons why we bring Chelsea on from time to time. And it seems like, you know, we've been kind of Chelsea centric as of late, but I think that's just more of a circumstance than anything. But I don't know. Me personally, it's just like, I would rather us just do what is fun and keeps us motivated. I don't really,
right?
I don't know. I don't feel don't feel driven to say, oh, so this one guy who has initials as his avatar, we should definitely do what he says. Or I don't know.
Yeah, when you start responding to what you think people want to hear, I think you lose a voice, you lose power if you. You know, I steal this from Howard Stern, really, is I want to do a show that I want to do and that I'd listen to. And I think there will be a nice subsection of people that will listen to it, too. And those who won't, just won't. But I don't think they will if I was to try to be not as genuine and not as honest by going out and getting trying to cater to a certain demographic or whatnot. So, I think it happens, and if it happens organically and there's a real reason because we like the person, we like their voice, then that's awesome. But to say, boy, let's go find a female, let's go find a person of color, let's go find somebody who might be, you know, lesbian or homosexual or questioning or whatever, then it loses all genuineness, and that's what I hope. If nothing else, I hope that we're honest and we're genuine.
I don't know really what the difference is between being like a perma panelist and just doing stuff because, you know, like Allison.
It's time to play Guess Who Said It, the game where you guess who said it. Jack Canfield, author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, or a general authority.
She might as well be a perma panelist for, you know, as much as we respect her and share things with her and get her input and she contributes. It's just she's not on the mailing list, which is intentional so we can talk about her behind her back. You know, you know, like
we love Alice.
We totally love Alice.
Well, especially when she started talking about how she likes how women smell and stuff. That was hot.
You know, but so like when I'm looking, when I've got a topic that I want to talk about, I might have like three or four people in mind that I think would be good to have that discussion with. And it might be some of these core guys here. It might be other people that we've had conversations with, you know, like a Chelsea or a John Hamer or Allison or Nick or, I mean, there's
or Kim,
Erica, Krista.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that we'll bring on for topical things, but it's just, because that's the kind of conversation that I want to have. I echo what Tom and Matt were saying. I don't ever want us to like try to fit a quota, but at the same time, I'm very interested in hearing other people's stories and exploring, you know, through their eyes. So, you know, we'll do episodes about feminism, or we'll you know, talk about different issues that we might not normally do, but that doesn't mean it's going to become our hallmark or trademark or fundamentally change what we're doing. Although I hope we're learning and evolving through it. So I don't know.
And I've always hoped that people would look at our podcast the same way I look at other podcasts. You find the ones that interest you, cherry pick through the archive and dig it. You know, I always get astounded when I see feedback or criticism saying, I just listened to this recent podcast and it's trash. I'm not going to listen to another episode. Like, what? I mean, I feel like we have quite a bit of diversity, quite a broad sense of topics and discussions that really that's the one you're going to put the nail in the coffin for. All right.
Yeah. And do you get that, John? We release on average two a week. So that's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot to dig from.
Yeah.
I mean, have you gotten that, John? I mean, how many episodes do you have? You're coming on 500, right?
If you count all the ones I did with Mormon Matters and Sunstone, it might be 550, you know?
I mean, do you get people after one episode? I'm done with you, John DeLynn. Now you've lost a listener.
I lose a listener.
Seriously?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, all the time. Yeah, you can't really cater to the lone voices. And I think authenticity wins in the podcasting world, you know? I think it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome to hear your perspective on that. Do you guys have a sense for who you think your audience is? Like, do you have a target audience?
I think
a sense of demographics?
Redheaded women. am I right?
That's my wife.
We've done a number of studies. Studies. Too official. We haven't done any studies. No, we've done some surveys, and it's surprising. You know, I'm always surprised when I see the way that the demographics come out. You know, we get young people and older people, and we've had a pretty good number of female listeners, and we have a lot of Nevermos, which just confuses me. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of all over the board. It's just it's people from all over.
And believers? Do you have believers?
Yeah, some.
Yeah, we've had some.
Some, a lot less.
It's hard to know because even with the surveys that we do, I think the most that we've ever had is maybe 250 people respond to a survey. And
sure.
we probably have a core audience around 3,000 or 4,000, would you say, Bob?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, the ones that are listening to nearly every episode or checking in. It's just like the way they do church statistics, the people who come more than once a month, right?
Yeah.
Probably 5,000 at the most.
So it's hard to extrapolate what we get from surveys onto our general audience. But I think that we are influenced by what people say in the surveys and in the feedback. I know I always love reading it, but I don't think we're really tailoring it to a particular audience or a particular demographic.
Right.
Right.
Really, the bottom line is like we're not asking for money, and we never will. And I know Bob doesn't like me to say we
never say
will.
Never. Not for this topic, just in general. It's a good rule of thumb.
This is a hobby. This is, not to sound narcissistic, this is more about us than our listeners because as soon as we're not enjoying it, it's over. You know, none of us are relying on this as an income source or anything like that. It's just like, let's just be fun. Let's be authentic. And let's see where that takes us.
Yeah, you know, I like it. To think that our demo, and this has come out from surveys often, but I'd like to hope that at some point we can be a place where people sit and say, we can ride this wave for a little while. You hear a lot of times Mormon Stories is regarded as somewhat transitional at times. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but I've heard that. And Mormon Expression is after you've kind of gone and you're in your angry phase. And then we've heard people say, you know, but infants is a place where you can just settle. And it's almost reflective on now we've maybe gotten through the transition. And I really like that. I think if that was true, that's more than I'd ever aspire to, but that would be awesome if we can be considered a landing place for people who have transitioned through some sort of trauma, whether that be Mormonism or something else, where they've got to reflect and say, wow, life's pretty crazy and kind of funny, and we can poke fun of it sometimes.
Yeah, I would call that the developmental theory of Mormon podcasting. Sort of, you start out with Mormon Stories.
We're Fowler stage 5.
Stage 5, yeah.
I love it. It's good.
Yeah. Fuck Fowler.
Fowler stage 5.
So that's a great segue. So my buddy David Christiansen, he's a comic, and his I think the profanity is fun and refreshing. So I love it. Fuck. You know, I am going to ask you guys how you think about doing that. A couple of the interesting comments I heard about the swearing was, number one, a guy who's a professional comedian who said that swearing's a crutch. You know, can't you be funny without the swearing? Another one said, you know, I want to be able to share this with people, but I can't because of the swearing. How do you guys process the swearing that you do in terms of your listenership and your reach?
Well, I think Jake should do this since we have an entire episode on the swearing.
Jake.
Hey.
You could just as much argue that people listen to you because of the swearing. So that's one take.
Right,
but go ahead, Jake.
Right, one take. Well, I mean, and you know, by the same token, I wouldn't say that somebody who never swears is also using that as a crutch.
Right.
So I think that whatever language you use should be. I mean, I'm getting to the point where I have a hard time kind of empathizing with the idea that there are sounds that you can make with your mouth that make something unlistenable to, you know, yeah. Like it's just, I mean, swearing is kind of, it's arbitrary and it's not something, I mean, it's just a social construct. So in a way it's hard to, but so is Mormonism. So is everything that we're doing. So is podcasting. So it's hard to argue that as well. I don't know. I guess I'm talking myself in circles a little bit, but what I just think that people should express themselves authentically, how it feels right for them and what's appropriate for the context. And since this is a, you know, a personal endeavor for all of us, kind of a hobby endeavor, I think that it's, I don't know, this is us. You know, if you wanted a watered down version or if you wanted some sort of censored version of us, it wouldn't be what it is.
Which you did for us once. We did experiment with one episode. Right. And then we get, it was like a Mike Tannehill. Was it the Noah one or was it the unintentional racist?
No. That was the racism one. That was the only really good one that we did with Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
true.
It's true. The rest of them weren't that good.
And we're talking about Mike Tannehill, not any of the other mics that we've had on. So, you and Erica, went through that one and edited out not just, swear words, but even some of the content that might have been a little sarcastic, critical towards right. the brethren, or, you know, something to try and make it more TBM friendly. And we just, we watched the downloads to see, okay, is this going to have a significant spike or, you know, is there any impact here? Any reason why we might want to do something like this, like have an infant's light, you know, stream or something, but nah.
It's too much work.
Too much work. Yeah. And,
yeah. And I feel like the people that would be off-put by the swearing are going to be off-put by the tone and the mentality and the approach that we take toward Mormonism anyway. I mean, we don't have any reverence. So having irreverent language is just kind of a cherry on top of that shit sundae that they're not going to want to eat anyway. So
we don't take ourselves that seriously. I think if we really thought, this episode is going to reach people and this is going to affect people on a real level, maybe we'd think about doing that. I think we'd be fooling ourselves to think that that would, even if it was shared with believing friends and family member, that they would, you know, look at it anything other than, yeah, those are four or five apostates. Why should I listen to them? Yeah. So it's just not worth it.
And when we started, we were more sensitive. I think we were kind of divided as a group as to how we wanted to censor our content. And, you know, we've talked about this a few times on our podcast that there was a comparison to a movie as an abortion, and then to one up, Randy called it a hanger abortion, you know, something like that. And we just went back and forth and, you know, pulled it out, and it was so offensive, and we just shouldn't do that. But it started sucking the fun out of it, you know, when we started censoring ourselves too much. So I for one, who was on the side of let's censor things and make the content more accessible to a more general audience, I kind of went, you know, let's just let it fly and let it be what it is. And people can self-select. And if it's not for them, then it's not for them.
Yeah. I want to ask each of you your favorite swear word. All right. Starting with Bob. Bob, favorite swear word.
Hell.
All right, Glenn.
Shit.
Lay.
Matt.
Jackass.
Scott.
Shit. But I don't swear much, so
yeah, I don't know.
It's not really a big thing for me. But okay. Shit.
Randy.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Wow.
Nothing makes me feel better than saying that.
Jake?
God damn it.
Okay. And Tom?
I'm going to go with either damn it or jackass. I like those.
Nobody dropped the F-bomb. Not one of you dropped the F-bomb.
Oh, I think Randy dropped it and wrapped it up
in
between Jesus Christ. In between our Lord and Savior, he dropped the F-bomb. Yeah.
But that's my second favorite.
All right. Real quick, Randy, Glenn, how long does it take to edit these episodes? It seems like it would take forever.
No, I don't know. It depends. It just depends on how much content we add to it, because then if we're going to add clips, then it takes however long it takes me to watch those clips and figure out which clips I'm going to put in and then to put in it. But I've got it down pretty quickly. You know, we've done some episodes. There's a few that we've recorded, and then I've stayed up for a couple of hours after recording and released it the next day. And it's just kind of formulaic at that point, where you put on an intro and an outro and there you go, because we're not having
to
edit the content. Yeah,
you got to listen to the whole thing
sometimes. But there have been ones that, you know, like the one last week with John DeLynn and Kate Kelly, the pieces that you wrote about why you were ex and she was, or why she was ex and you weren't. I didn't listen to that before we put it out. I didn't have time. Yeah. But I think a lot of times we have kind of a nice system where mainly it's Bob, but sometimes it'll be one of the other guys will listen to the episode and send edit notes that are time-stamped and say, cut it here. Stop it when Glenn says, you know, X, Y, Z, and start it when Randy says B, Y, C, or, you know, something. And
that's super helpful.
It goes really, really quickly, because all that thinking has been done for you. You know, once Bob says it, the thinking has been done. So,
yes. But also the collaborative process is a lot of fun.
It is,
I've done mini-sodes or just stuff that I've done my own little production on, and then sending it out to the guys for input is a lot of fun. And, you know, little tweaks here and there, it's just it makes it not just a better product, but this is why I like working with these guys, is because it's fun to collaborate.
Let's now ask Scott how long it takes to edit an episode.
Months. Months.
Months. I'm the slowest.
That's awesome.
No, I'm not too bad, but it's a question of when I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So here's a little, I have a setup to this question, but Glenn, I remember when you reached out to me early on, maybe I have this wrong, but I seem to remember you making a pitch to me early on, probably from Japan, wanting to maybe do some interviews or participate in Mormon Stories in some way.
Yeah,
I did that as well, John. I sent you an email and said, here's the six interviews I want to do. I want to produce for you, because you made a call for it at one point, and you said, yeah, go do it. Let's do it. And I never did.
Okay.
You got the green light and you didn't take it.
Yeah, it's true. John said, those sound great. Do it.
Yeah.
Let me know when they're done. And I was like, oh, well, now I'm not sure where to go from there.
I got a pat on the head and no green light. But, you know, it was it was like, thanks. That sounds awesome. But like it wasn't. But and I don't know what the time frame was. I don't remember, because after I started doing a couple of Mormon Expression episodes, then you sent me a message on Facebook or something that was like, dude, wrong team. but I think there were things that we were doing, like with the second ward, you know, maybe we started getting to know each other through that more. And I think that's where I first met Randy and Scott, actually, was through interactions on that. I think.
Oh, so you guys were on the second ward.
Yeah.
I was in the first and second ward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was as well, Randy.
So you guys
ended up staying only on the first ward.
So does someone want to tell anyone what you're talking about right now?
I'm
confused.
John had some secret societies online that we couldn't talk about.
The first online group you started, and then it got too big, and then you started a second ward.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
You're with me?
I totally know. I think the listeners might be lost. But yeah, I started a private forum of like 200 of my closest friends. And just to see what would happen, what you guys are referring to as First Ward still exists today. It's this amazing community of people that are all super close. Whenever anyone
is that the swinger ward?
No.
Oh, not that close.
Not that I know.
Not that close.
Not that I know.
Maybe some.
Asshole. Shout out to Heather Olson Beale.
Yeah. It's a great group. And then when that group got too big, I created a second one. And I think a lot of you guys were part of that second one. But some of you were part of the first. So,
yeah.
Okay, here's where I was going, though. So, Glenn, I remember like going, you know, Glenn's style isn't my style. And I was scared to let go of creative control.
No,
but go ahead.
But what it's because I was doing that. Like I had a website called MormonFolklore.org or something with this satirical character, Stephen Erastus Knudsen III.
It was
very biting satire, and I think I referred you to that as like a way of getting to know me, and you're like, that's not going to do it. I'll bet that was it.
Well,
I turn anybody off,
right?
I kind of remember that, yeah. and then when you join Mormon Expression. You know, I certainly remember some of my earliest times listening, feeling tension between you and John Larson. Hmm. And so a really strong memory that comes through listening to your My Mormon Expression episode was how all the other panelists on Infants on Thrones kind of referred to you kind of as the leader. And I felt a lot of respect from them towards you. And
I just overtalk everybody.
No, I think you generally are kind of the leader of the podcast. You guys can tell me if I'm wrong about that. But I just realized that if that's true, I just think you were never meant to follow. I think you were meant to do your own thing. And once you were able to get your own thing and with a great group of co-collaborators, that's when your real creative passion and energy was able to come through. I just want to say that was one of the things that touched me listening to the episode, was to be able to see your leadership come through and how it's really blossomed. That was gratifying for me as someone who dissed you early on.
That's totally – no, I'll step in and say that's totally true. Glenn is the leader, whether by default or just by the fact that he steps up and does that. But no, he takes the lead on, you know, 90% of the editing work, probably. He coordinates a lot of our episodes. He's you know, puts in a lot of legwork, and sometimes the rest of us just kind of show up, and he's the one running the show. We all try to to participate and help out in our own different ways. But for sure, Glenn's the primary motivator in the group, I would say.
And I am super uncomfortable with that.
Yeah. For real. For it.
I am.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. No, you don't want to be. This is the thing. You don't want to be. But you're at times you're so much more enthusiastic than the rest of us. Like Glenn will just when you wake up on Thursday morning and something got posted by Glenn at 3 a.m. That's because Glenn is just like super excited about whatever project he's working on, and he just edited it and posted it, and like we all wake up and we're like, oh, we have a new episode. Interesting. So
yeah. Well, I think it's really cool. Not just your leadership, Glenn, but just the vibe and the camaraderie and the mutual respect to the panel. So I just have to make a shout out about
well,
that.
Well, I think, you know, we talked earlier some of the things that we wanted to avoid. And I think one of the things we really wanted to avoid was having a leader. And that's one of the reasons.
Yeah,
we didn't want to have one personality that was predominant on the podcast. And I still don't want that. So I don't know. It does make me uncomfortable.
I meant that in more of a backstage production sense. Yeah. We still don't believe anything that comes out of your mouth.
Right.
Or yeah, give like any extra respect.
Yeah, nobody defers to him on anything. Yeah,
no. Right. If Glenn's a leader, it's because he has the most energy and the most motivation and the most skill in editing and the most...
Reverend... got balls as big as church bells.
Thank you.
But if you think of a leader as someone who is an infallible figure, he is an embattled leader because we beat the shit out of him all the time. We all are free to just. Like
free to
totally
choose.
Unload on each other.
No, it's just true.
It's like true. How many times have we had threads that have gone over 100 emails where we're just going back and forth?
37.
Just going over history.
Yeah.
How many times have I blown up on you, but then I feel bad afterward and I want to.
Yeah, I know. 37.
What?
37.
That's how many
that's
times.
That's how many times I've been keeping track.
You've kept track. Yeah. Wow. And there's no dominant person saying, oh, okay, fuck all you guys. I'm the leader. This is how I want it done. It's going to be done this way. It doesn't happen with us.
In other words, you're not Mormon Stories and you're not Mormon Expression.
So, yeah, there's no charismatic leader. But Glenn,
no, it's, yeah,
Glenn
it's
does the most. And, so I guess if you want to point to someone who's the most important person, for the infants and its success, it's definitely Glenn.
Yeah.
Glenn's prolific in putting out content. He's extremely creative. We that's why we brought Jake on. Jake, what's up with that? I thought you were going to come on and produce more content, but whatever. But Glenn, he is prolific. He started these mini-sos, and I thought, to me, that was an inspiration.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
Shorts!
This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
Is to be able to put out little blurbs of 7 to 15 minute episodes that of topics or something that doesn't cover a whole hour or 2 hours, but needs to be said or wants to be said. That to me was a real important turn in our podcast and kind of some of the things that we've done. And Glenn just threw one out, and it was so he is prolific, and he can churn stuff out and edits the fuck out of things, as Randy likes to say. and you know, we would have had 10 episodes a year versus the 24 plus episodes a year that we have if it wasn't for him.
100 episodes. We have 100 episodes to date this year.
Nice. Congrats. Centennial. All right. So for those who haven't listened, I want to just do a round robin. If each of you were to recommend one Infants on Thrones episode, what would be the one you would recommend? So let's start with Tom. Tom, what's if the listeners have to pick one, what would you pick?
Jeez. Well, if you want to, my favorite minisode is the regret one that Glenn did.
So you're not thinking of doing anything
stupid, are you?
He was.
And if I kind of have a soft spot for suicide, and you know, Glenn and we've had some pretty personal conversations about, you know, his experiences, my experiences, and stuff like that. So that's my favorite minisode. As far as full episodes,
you're taking the hit so your buddies can think of theirs.
I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say mine. I'm going to say mine while you're thinking, Tom. My favorite, I think, is Who Wrote the Book of Mormon, where you interviewed John Hamer first, and then you interviewed Craig Criddle. I swear that there's so much in there that I had no idea. It was so deep, so thoughtful, so insightful. Absolutely loved it. So that, yeah. I'm gonna put that as my favorite. So that's, all right, Tom.
All right, that's a good one, but it's a little long for me. But yeah, I like it. All right, I'm gonna go with Little Factories. I've listened to that a few times, and I think I was a part of it. I think just as far as like the evolution of the discussion goes, you know, there's some really fun humor parts, and then the editing was really phenomenal, where we edit in the speech that was really pretty hard to find, and I don't know. There's some really touching parts.
Lloyd K. Packer, Little Factories talk.
Yeah,
and
we had some really cool feedback too. You know, I don't know that.
Okay,
that's
perfect. All right, Jake.
Okay, I would probably have to say, and this may be a recency bias with this one, just because it happened not too long ago. But I really, really enjoyed the polygamy essay Smackdown one that we did, because we had John Hamer on that one. And listening to him, being able to talk with him about, you know, deconstructing that whole essay was really, really interesting. I thought it was fascinating. So
you guys scooped me on that one. You guys totally scooped me, but it was awesome.
Oh, right. Yeah, because he was.
That's right, because you had Hamer on.
Right.
Yeah. You scooped yourself, John.
John, we only scooped you because you canceled.
Right.
I know. No, it was a good scoop. I was fine with it.
I wasn't even thinking of that. Sorry to rub it in, man.
No, it's good. It's good. I had approached him, but then my wife told me I needed to wait a day. So you guys earned it fair and square. Mm-hmm. All right, Randy.
I think my favorite one is Book of Abraham Smackdown Part 1. But mainly it's because of the intro.
Who was on that? Who's on that?
I was on that.
Jake. No, Jake
was there a special guest? Was it a special guest? Or okay.
No, Jake was the angry personality.
Yeah,
Glenn was the TBM whisperer.
Right. Jake dropped so many F-bombs in that.
I don't know why that one really got under my skin. That one was embarrassing for me, actually. I changed the way that I approach podcasts after that one.
The reason why I love it is, first of all, it was my idea to bring in Flight of the Conchords song, Friends.
Boom, 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 boom,
ping.
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 Bob, they intuit that it takes a lot of work to indoctrinate. And when they see that the kids aren't getting that early indoctrination, they panic.
If they see that they're watching too many cartoons, or they're playing Xbox too much, or they're, you know, they'll try and rope them in, exactly like Randy's saying.
Friends sing together. La 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 la. Friends do things together. La, 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 la. Friends laugh together.
Oh man, I'd be the worst parent. That's horrible.
Friends make graphs together.
La, 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 la. I can't wait to fuck up a kid. I'm gonna.
It's about time, Jake. What are you, 25 now?
There's our Easter egg.
Friends help you when you're in danger. Friends are people who are not strangers. Friends help you shift into a new place. Tell you if you've got food on your face. Friends are the ones on whom you can depend.
He's my friend. He's not my friend. Friends are the ones who are there in the end. He's my friend. They're not my friends.
Yeah, I mean, I love lying to children. It is my favorite thing in the whole world, is telling them lies and getting them to believe it. So maybe I should raise him in the church.
If you trip over, I'll catch you fall. If you kick my dick, I won't break your balls.
If you get drunk and vomit on me, I'll make sure you get in safely.
If you cross the road and a truck struck you,
I'll scrape you up and reconstruct you. I'll cheer you up if you're depressed.
If you get murdered, I'll avenge your death.
Well, I've got my almost 5-year-old convinced that I literally cannot hear what she's saying unless she asks it in a really polite way.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That's awesome.
Friends walk together. La 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 la. Pop and lock together. Me and him together. La 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 la. Me and Jim forever.
My 6-year-old, sweetest kid. He would be such a great Mormon. He believes in Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny. But if you try to ask him about Jesus, man, he's not real.
But the Easter Bunny, I mean,
Easter Bunny.
Friends go jogging at the track. Friends borrow money, never pay it back. Friends do not let friends do crack. Friends go out and grab a snack. Friends drink beer in the sun.
Unlike girlfriends, they don't mind if you have more than one. Friends tell you when your fly's undone.
Your fly's undone.
But man, because the evidence of the Easter Bunny is he leaves a basket. The evidence of Santa Claus is he leaves presents. There's evidence, you know.
That's true. Those are all good.
But what evidence do you have for Jesus?
My Uncle John had a special friend. They dressed alike. His name was Ben. I've never seen two friends like them. They were very, very friendly men. Boom, la, 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 la. Boom. Boom. Friends, 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 boom, la, 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 la. Boom. Friends, 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 boom, boom, la, boom, la, la, la. Friends, friends, boom, friends, friends, boom, la, 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 la. Friends, la, 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 la.
And the intro really, to me, captures what this podcast is about. So we have this awesome song by Flight of the Conchords with Jim Gaffigan. As the guest star for that song, and it's just us bullshitting before we even start the podcast about raising children, and to me the first that intro is the best intro we've ever done. I get goosebumps every time I listen to that intro, but I also love the podcast as well because we take a church article that's hidden from the members on LDS.org. On apologetics for the Book of Abraham, and line by line, we break that sucker down.
All right.
That was a lot of fun.
Book of Abraham Smackdown. Scott.
I'm going to say the Under the Banner of Heaven episode.
Was that about Krakauer's book?
Yeah, it was about Krakauer's book. It was towards the beginning when we started. It was one of our earlier ones. There were a bunch of clips and everything that we put in there, but yeah, that was one of my favorites.
That book made me sick to my stomach because of the Lafferty brothers, but also just because I realized for the first time there's very little difference between Joseph Smith and Warren Jeffs. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It was that book that kind of drew those lines, connected those dots for me.
Yeah, it's a tough book to read.
Yeah. All right, Matt.
Yeah, I'm glad Scott mentioned that one because now I can mention a different one. One of my favorites is Fear. That was early October 2012, an Halloween episode because it has so many elements. Glenn did some interviews. I did some interviews. I did a group interview where we played with a Ouija board, did some Man on Street interviews, and it was the closest thing to Radiolab, I think, that was done. And I loved it. And then the other two I want to mention are Tom's Coffee episode and Randy's Arachnophobia episode, where he talks about his growth in coming to go from abhorring to really embracing just homosexuality. So those two things, by embracing, not embracing in like a literal sense, but in a mental sense. I think you know what I mean. But yeah. I wish the other guys would do more mini-sodes because when they do them, they're just fantastic.
Amen.
And then there's a lot of episodes that happen that were never intended to happen. They were just conversations that happened organically, and there was just a flow. And we just started having fun and going on some little jag, and it becomes a new topic. And I can't even point to the ones, and Glenn, you might be better than me to say this is the one that happened. Those are fun because they're fun having those conversations, and then they're fun listening back to them.
Yeah. All right, Bob.
Okay, so I'm not going to shy away from this. I'm going to go with Bob's Mormon cred scale. I love
that, Bob. This is my top
surprise, surprise.
No shame.
You're saying it's the best. It was the greatest ever.
For some reason, number 3.5 is coming out for me right now. I'm not sure why. I don't know why that number just popped in my head.
So
3 to 3.5 is just for some reason that number.
Oh boy. That's no awesome. Comment. So I really have a lot of fun when I can use this as an outlet to test ideas I have. And the reason I like Bob's Mormon Cred Scale as a project is because I had this idea of defining the Mormon experience and quantifying it and giving people a credibility score, which is like an awful, horrible thing to do, but it was just so much fun. And it really just having all the guys sort of beat me up on all my points and how I came to it and sort of, you know, hold my own and show them how they're all idiots and they don't get it. No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't like that. But I had a lot of fun. And so that's the thing for me. It's not the best one, but it was the one that was the most fun. So I'm just going with that as my answer.
All right, Glenn, bring us home.
I think we have to go with Tao of Mormonism.
For some reason, I asked you. I knew you.
No, but for I think that's our worst.
The Krista episodes, of course.
I was going to say Krista. Yeah. That would have been
no. When she channels Emma Smith, I mean, come on, for real? That was awesome.
What questions would you ask if you could talk to Emma Smith? Okay, people, you know the disclaimer. If psychic talk makes your blood boil, then this is not the episode for you.
What about like Emma Smith, who traced the outline of the plates underneath a handkerchief?
I don't think that happened.
Okay.
Crazy, she said. She's like totally right here. Do you want to ask her anything? I'm like getting a strong Emma Smith vibe. So.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, I mean... What did she think about William Law?
That was what I was going to ask.
William Law? Other than, I think she... Wait, William Law?
Yeah.
Did she hate him? She hated him. Would that make sense?
No.
It's not how the story goes.
What's the story?
The story was that William Law...
Lie. She says it's a complete lie.
So, what does she have to say about Fanny Alger?
I said I told you I don't want to talk about these old people. I want to tell you what's true and what's not true. I'm tired of talking about these people. I'm done with these people. I'm tired of these people.
Sorry.
They're like jumping on a. She's showing him jumping on a moving train that's preparing to crash. It was my goal to redirect the train. She's like redirecting it and showing it away like towards truth. Because I believed in the beginning and even in the end that Joseph could have steered that train towards good and towards truth. I always felt God's presence with him. But he chose to ignore that God in favor of like a crowd of people around him. And pleasing that crowd, that is when we grew so separate. It's because he has this little entourage and she's not part of it. She didn't want part of it. That's why you're seeing me as antisocial and having nothing good to say. That I don't like anything. But in truth, I don't like the entourage. I don't like those around him. I don't like those feeling, they're like whispering in his ears, telling him what to prophesize about. It wasn't even coming from him. Some of it didn't even come from his imagination. Because he couldn't say no and push people away. They were, like, washing his feet, she's showing.
But she also said that you and Tom were married at some previous life.
Yeah. That was fun. But for reals, though, I've got the same answer as Tom, the little factories. I absolutely love the discussion, probably for a lot of the same reasons that Tom mentioned, because we start off so locker room you know, jocular with masturbation jokes, and by the end of it, we're just incensed at the bigotry and hatred that's institutionalized in that talk, and we can't even stomach it. We're so angry and just like viscerally upset with it. I listened to that with my kids, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. And that intro was the Boyd K. Packer, "I'm Too Sexy."
Of all the blessings that have come, the best thing in my life is the companionship and comfort I get from a very young man. Why would our Heavenly Father do that to anyone? We raise an alarm. An alarm. An alarm. I'm too sexy for wickedness, too sexy for wickedness. There never was happiness. Happiness. I'm too sexy for compassion, too sexy for compassion. So-called tolerance must be wrong. We cannot be happy, nor saved, nor exalted without fighting the gay lesbian movement. Growing numbers of people now campaign to make spiritually dangerous lifestyles legal and socially acceptable. Now, in the spirit of love and sympathy, I speak to you who may be struggling against temptations for which there is no moral expression. And the simple truth is, the penis of any individual bumps up against the penis of another. Do not yield. Cultivate the spiritual strength to resist all of your life, if need be, in the spirit of love and sympathy. Keep your covenants, and you'll be safe. Break them, and you will not. I'm too sexy for perversion, too sexy for that substance. It might be likened to having a little factory in your body, one designed to produce that substance that can generate life. As you move closer to manhood, this little factory will sometimes produce an oversupply of this substance. The Lord has provided a way for that to be released. You on the catwalk? Yeah, you on the catwalk? Yeah. I shake my little tush on the catwalk. There are some circumstances in which young men may be tempted to handle one another. Sometimes this begins in a moment of idle foolishness when boys are just playing around. When a young man is finding his way into manhood, such experiences can misdirect his normal desires and pervert him. No one is predestined to a life of perversion. I repeat very plainly, physical mischief with another man is forbidden. I'm too sexy for the devil, too sexy for sympathy, compassion, physical mischief, penis. I'm too sexy for men, too sexy for masculine, manly men. I'm too sexy for
infants on thrones.
Which was a lot of fun to put together. And you know, so there have been a couple things like that.
It was a little long, but yeah, it was good.
Yeah, yeah. You guys thought some of you thought it was a little long, but
no, yeah. I laughed so many times listening to that, and I was in the conversation. But that was the one that we've got feedback from a guy who identified as a gay man growing up in the church, who basically said thank you. It was so great to hear, you know, four or five straight guys defending me. I felt protected, or I felt taken up for, kind of my, as a kid in listening back to.
Yeah, that was Nate.
That was Zilpha's interview, yeah, that Glenn mentioned earlier.
Yeah, that was Nate, yeah, who gave us that feedback.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that really did it. Touched me. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, Glenn, speaking of Chris, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a time where I was interested in sponsoring new podcasts, yeah, out of the Open Stories Foundation. And I got Jared Anderson to start Mormon Sunday School and Dan Witherspoon to start Mormon Matters. And I remember approaching you saying, dude, do you want to start a podcast with me? I think this is around the time, tell me if I'm wrong, that you were breaking off from John Larson. And what I remember you saying is that you wanted to start a podcast on Joseph Smith. Yeah. But that you wanted full creative control and the ability to play this thing with Krista with the seance. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
Good move. Good move.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was around the same time that I was thinking of Infants on Thrones as well, you know, with these guys. Because, like, I had so many conversations with her that were just so much fun. And, like, I'd read sections of the Doctrine and Covenants, and she would interpret things, you know, or say, like, oh, yeah, this one's definitely real. Oh, no, that one's made up. And I just thought that would be an interesting way to read the Doctrine and Covenants. But what I really wanted to do with that Joseph Smith project, and I still think about it from time to time, and I think about it, you know, with John Hamer as maybe helping out with something like this. But the church or KBYU put together a TV series. I think there were two seasons on the Joseph Smith papers, and so there's all of this content that's just out there ready to be smackdown, just ready to be critiqued on the life of Joseph Smith that I think would be so fun to do, but a lot of work, you know. So I've got all these Joseph Smith books, and I start reading them, and I get into like halfway through the first chapter, and then I get bored, and I start reading something else, and you know.
Will someone read this to me?
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Can I get this in audiobook? What? Yeah. So
I just thought it was cool because you know how like those are stories of Elvis or the Beatles going to the record label, and the record label says no, and then they go on and become famous. You know, I turned you guys down, and now look what you become. You're becoming famous.
Yeah. We're so famous. Yeah. We're so.
There are dozens of listeners, John.
Literally.
Well, but
literally dozens.
But so you know, and I think one of the inspirations, you know, you mentioned you listened, John, to the Our Mormon Expression episode, but you came to Indianapolis maybe a month or so ago, and we were going to get together, but like, kind of at the last minute, I pulled a Randy on you, like if it was a Tom date, but and so we weren't able to get together, and in the follow up, I think you suggested maybe we could do something together with Infants on Thrones, and like the thing that I first thought was, I wonder if we'll get a John DeLynn bump, because I'm a total stats nerd and stats hound, and these guys will tell you it's one of the things that they're like, Glenn, why do you feel driven to have this itchy trigger finger and release 3 episodes or 4 episodes in a week? And I'm like, because our stats are going down. These bars, they need to go up, and they're going down.
He needs medication.
Yeah,
for it, really.
I might. So,
yes.
So
yeah, you always resist putting Mormon anywhere in our tagline or our title.
Oh, well, we can't rebrand now. I mean, I like Infants on Thrones. I do put Mormon in the a lot of the feeds, you know, when we post. Yeah. But anyway, so. I
hope you guys get a bump.
Well, I'm curious. Just when you post those questions last week, we started to see a little bit of a bump. So it's already starting. So I'll be curious to see. But when we did Tom Phillips earlier this year, like in February, that like quadrupled our listenership, or more. I mean, that was a huge bump for us. So
I listened to that one.
Yeah,
yeah, that was good. Okay. So, you guys have talked about being under the radar a little bit. Has anything ever blown up with for you guys where like you did something and it either caused a huge battle between you or like there was a really significant uproar where people got really pissed off and were really critical or angry, or have you guys just kind of avoided all that?
Oh boy.
Kate Kelly.
Yeah. Closest thing last week with Kate Kelly.
None of us got angry with each other.
No.
No.
No, we don't get, yeah.
I'd say for the most part we've avoided all of that.
Well, yeah, our dust-ups come up and resolve within a few hours and a few snippy emails that end up turning into texts, and then we all hug it out.
Yeah, we hug it out, yeah.
Yeah, but Glenn already mentioned the Tom Phillips thing was a huge bump. That caused a major increase in our listenership.
That was all positive.
That was all positive. But the feminism thing, I don't know how many listeners are members of Mormon Hub, but
right.
those people that are will know the huge personal, like, you know, you guys did a podcast
The Kate Kelly, John DeLynn podcast, you know, was something you guys spun together. You spun together in like a matter of hours. Like, I got an email that Glenn was like really emotionally.
I want to talk about this. Do you guys want to talk about this?
Exclamation points. I want to talk about this.
Glenn's like, I want to talk about this. Get on Skype
now. Can anyone get on Skype now?
Right now.
Yeah, and I was in a hotel, so I couldn't get on. But so the guys that got on. And they did that 2-hour podcast, and then we reached out to Kate Kelly personally, and a thread was started
just by tagging her on the Mormon Hub. You know, tagged both her and John, so they knew, hey, we're talking about you.
The really personal tag, though, like is very intimate. And so
that right.
Didn't that thread go over 200?
It went over 300.
Oh, it was like 300. Yeah,
300.
So is that the biggest dust up you guys have had in terms of like? You know, noise or heat
from outside.
Certainly heat.
I think the only one that even comes close, and it's very small, was on Reddit when we did the Manacled Mormon and Sex Chains, and somebody put the header, you know, do the panelists on Infants on Thrones read this because you guys suck. And you know, but even that wasn't that big of a deal. We had some exchanges with them, and then it's like, all right.
Yeah, and then they said, but Matt was on too, so it's okay. And then they said, yeah, you're right.
Matt saved the day. Yeah. Drunk Matt. Yeah.
I think the biggest internal things that we've had just come from my exuberance and like maybe Bob saying, okay, slow down. And I'm like, no, I don't want to slow down. Slow down. You know, so I mean, some conflicts with that, but it's not really a big deal.
Okay.
So I want to ask you, though, John, did you feel that we were unfair or somehow too glib towards you or somehow attacked you?
Well, the number three or 3.5 was in his head.
So Bob, you're often the self-aware police. How does John rank here on a scale of 1 to 5 being self-aware in this essay?
Oh, he's in the 3-ish range.
Really?
Yeah.
I give him a higher score than that, but okay, go ahead.
Oh, you give him a higher score. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh and I have to be self-aware on the self-aware meter. But I think there's some back padding. You know, he's patting himself on the back throughout here, like telling us about his connections to the top, and because you know all of you people out there are asking so much, this burden of mine to expose all this information, I guess, since enough of you have asked. I mean, there's just I'm being a cynic and I'm playing that role, but just the way he's phrasing it is kind of
But you know that there've got to be
dozens.
I was trying to think of the right adjective. But lots of people that keep asking him, what's going on with this? What's going on with this? And have been for months. And he's been pretty silent on it. And so for him to come out and go, okay, all right, you guys want to know what I think? I'm going to put it all out here so I don't have to keep answering these questions over and over and over and over and over again. And I thought he did a pretty good job with it.
I agree.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
3.5 out of 5.
There's no half stars.
You have lost all self-aware cred.
Don't start with that.
John, did you listen to the episode?
No, I listened to the whole thing, and I swear I was really honored and kind of touched just that you would even think that it was relevant enough to talk about. So I was, and I thought you guys were really respectful, and I really appreciate your analysis. This really hit home for me during the My Mormon Expression episode, but I honestly really value all the panelists' perspectives. So when you guys talk, I'm like, wow, this is really thoughtful. This is really seasoned. This is really insightful. And I learn a lot. So I really appreciated it, and I was just grateful the whole time. There were several moments where I laughed out loud, very loud, I thought it was great. So I was grateful, really. Yeah.
So what did you think of Kate's responses on the Mormon Hub?
Oh, I'm pretty sure he didn't go through all that.
No, he liked a few of them.
Kate, Kate reached out to me very, very early and made some fun comments about you guys. But I was glad the conversation was happening. From her perspective, any conversation about feminism is a good thing.
What? And I didn't get that from our interaction.
That's nice of you to say. We'll run with it. That's good.
Yeah. That's my opinion. That's my opinion. No, I'm not good. Saying that's how she felt.
Oh.
But I hope you guys can get her on. I think that would be really fun.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, well, I think it's an important conversation, so I'm glad that was happening.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't be opposed to it. I have a hard time seeing her wanting to that she would might. Even be worthy.
We're not worthy. We're not worthy.
You're worthy. You're worthy. Get up.
Because you know, I got to tell you, from my whole experience with this feminism thing. I really hate the terminology and the jargon that's in it, like male ally. Like, man. I'm gonna identify myself as a male ally. I want to throw up when I hear that.
Yeah,
you know. but at the same time, I agree with it. I just don't want to like get all those labels and yeah. It's kind of left a sour taste in my mouth. Even though I agree that there needs to be gender equality, of course, but man, it's so hard to talk about. Jeez.
It is, man. And if you open your mouth, you get accused of mansplaining and yeah. It's just, you know,
yeah.
It's tricky, but it's also a really important conversation. Yeah. So and I thought it was really fun. I was really grateful you guys did
but
that.
And then I think the day after that happened, you know, Bob and I and Chelsea was part of it. For a little bit, she didn't say much, but we had a conversation with Margaret Toscano that was awesome. And
it was great.
And there was
yeah.
there was no like requirement that we speak the language or anything like that. We're just having a great discussion, and you know, feminism was part of it, but it wasn't the whole thing.
Yeah. And, Margaret's awesome.
Yeah, it was just Margaret's so fun. Awesome, yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. So you guys decided to be feminists rather than talk about feminism.
Yeah, uh-huh. Right.
There you go.
But not feminists. It's not that word.
Yeah,
and whatever. Chelsea was a brilliant addition, I have to say. She is brilliant. So.
Matt.
She's Matt. Matt's got the biggest issue. Yeah.
A lot of people really like the placebo episode.
Oh, I thought they were fantastic.
Placebo was great.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Heather. I am the unofficial matriarch of the Mormon Expositor podcast. I'm only 35. Can you be a matriarch at 35? Anyway, you can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thanks for joining us today on Mormon Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us make more like it by becoming a monthly subscriber at mormonstories.org. Music for this episode was provided by the Lower Lights. You guys,
yep.
You guys, no, anyone need a potty break or a beverage break?
I got to go to bed. It's 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's just jump in.
Is Matt
right.
there? Is Matt on?
I don't know.
Yeah, Matt, what the fuck? Seriously,
I'll
dude.
Him. I'll text him.
I texted him.
What a okay. dick.
I love how that's the default.
You know what happens.
Oh, what? the bat.
Kristen's walking around half dressed.
Yeah, well,
Sorry,
yeah.
I just got a what was going on? I just barely came back.
Somebody got killed, right?
You're just talking about your wife, don't worry.
Bat call. It is bat phone.
Yeah, it was the bat phone, in fact, revolving a murder, but
welcome back. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. And yes, Kristen is walking around naked. I'm just kidding.
All right. So we're ready to start part two. Everybody ready? Because I had dreams of one of you answering, fuck no.
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.